It's so nice to be with all of you, and I've been thinking about all of you so much over my winter break. I hope that you all took some time for yourselves over the last few weeks, and I hope that it was meaningful for you and that you got some time to rest. So today we are starting a new module in Sacred Depths. We're starting our Breakthrough Questioning module. And the Breakthrough Questioning module is 3 classes long, although really we're going to be looking at questioning and creating awareness throughout the rest of the program, because as we get to some of the fancier techniques like Befriend Your Fear and Wheel of Self-Sabotage and Rewiring Negative Thought Patterns, you know, the questioning skills and the listening skills, creating awareness skills and energetics are all the building blocks of those fancier skills. So we have a module, directly devoted to breakthrough questioning, but we're going to be doing breakthrough questioning throughout the rest of our training. And actually, before I even go forward, because I just mentioned Befriend Your Fear process, I wanted to just remind you, in case it's not on your calendar, that we have a full 5 hours later this month that are devoted to training on the Befriend Your Fear process. It is powerful. You are going to love it, love it, love it, love it. And if you can be at the training, the workshop live, that is the best, because we will have some time to actually do practice. We'll see how it goes, but my plan is at certain points to divide you into groups of 2 and do a little practice here and there. You'll have opportunity to ask questions. So just in case that's not on your calendars, please put it on there. It's January 23rd from 12 to 5 Eastern. All right, so in the meantime, questioning. So we've got 3 calls on breakthrough questioning. Today's call, we're going to really be looking at the foundational principles and elements of powerful breakthrough questions. So we're going to kind of be looking at like the principles, the elements, the psychology of questions, so that you really understand, like you really have a good basis in understanding what it means to ask really effective and breakthrough questions. And then in our next class, we're going to go through lots of different types of questions and question sequences and when to use them and why to use them. And then our 3rd breakthrough questioning class, which will be on January 21st, is we're going to do a questioning practicum. So it'll be opportunity for you to practice your questioning skills and get feedback similar to how our other practicums have gone, except we're going to be moving directly into the skill of questioning. And if you would like even some more practice on breakthrough questioning, put on your calendar January 20th, which is a Monday, from 1 to 2:30. I'm going to be leading a questioning practicum, and you're more than welcome to come to that and practice and receive the value of that as well. Okay, so let's jump right in. So why are questioning skills so important to effective coaching? I mean, I think we all know that questioning is a big and important part of transformation, but why? Because at the heart of masterful coaching, and really at the heart of any kind of transformation, is masterful questioning. You can't have one without the other. The most masterful coaching questions have the ability to help create awareness. for your client. They have the ability to help your client access her own intuition. Masterful questions have the ability to activate creativity, brainstorming, and problem solving. Masterful questions have the ability to empower your clients to take responsibility for themselves, to create integrity, to foster commitment. Masterful questions help clients articulate their own judgments, create new habits, breakthroughs, activate learning, and also really good questions help your clients connect more deeply to themselves. One guiding principle at the heart of any coaching session is this: human beings are curious. Human beings are curious, and curiosity leads to learning. It's so simple, right? Of course, human beings are curious, and curiosity leads to learning. It's so simple, and of course, that's one of the basis of why questions are so valuable, and it's important for both us as coaches and for our clients. Now, in today's coaching industry and in today's transformational industry and in today's self-help industry, way too many practitioners consult when what's required in that moment is questioning. Now, there's nothing wrong with consulting, and for a lot of us, and myself absolutely included in this group, consulting is a very important part of the service that we provide. We have an expertise and wisdom and experience and knowledge, and our clients want our opinions on things, right? We looked at this in our Creating Awareness module that consulting or facting is one way of creating awareness, and it's an important way. But that being said, a big mistake that many practitioners make is that they default to consulting more than is actually helpful or supportive for their client. And in doing so, miss out on opportunities to ask questions that will actually create way more energy, way more motivation, way more excitement, way more insight, way more breakthroughs, and way better ideas than if they were to simply just share their expertise. In situations that require questioning, when we default to consulting, our clients then miss out on the opportunity to answer a question, maybe the simplest question ever, but one that can create the biggest difference. So learning for sure happens when we create awareness through consulting. And again, I consult a lot, but there are actually many more moments where learning is more optimal when it comes through self-discovery, self-inquiry, self-proclamation, and having our clients answer questions for themselves. Now, the reasons why coaches or practitioners, transformational leaders, end up consulting when they probably should be asking some questions can vary, but here are some of the reasons. number one, if you have a discomfort with the learning process or a fear that it will take too long for your client to learn, then chances are you might default into consulting when actually asking questions is much better route to take. Sometimes if you as the practitioner have a need to sound smart or to impress your client, i.e. if the playing field isn't equal, that can be a reason why you may end up consulting when it's actually a better moment for questioning. If you tend to take over responsibility for others and for your clients, right back to the level playing field, or if without realizing it, you're someone who heroes other people, H-E-R-O, right? Like you rescue them, then you might be defaulting a little bit too often to consulting when a question would be much better served. If you tend to not trust that the client always knows best, then you might be doing more consulting when questioning would be better served. And then sometimes it's just you forget, right, because you are just in the habit of doing a lot of consulting, so you're just not in the pattern. So I want you to think about that for a moment. Are there moments where you might be taking shortcuts and just giving clients or your coaching partner the answers instead of providing them with the learning opportunity that questions provide? And if you are doing that, if you sense that's something that's going on for you, why? What is the reason? Maybe it's one of the reasons I just mentioned, or it's something else. And if you're not already working with clients, you can relate this to your personal relationships and conversations, or even your conversations with yourself. Are there times where you've already made up your mind, you're telling yourself what to do, versus maybe asking some powerful questions? So take a moment with that. All right, so let's pause here for a moment. This is just the intro. We've got a lot more to look at today, but I really feel like this consulting versus questioning issue is an important one, especially for Sacred Depths coaches, and I'd love to hear what's coming up for you so far around this. What are you seeing for yourself? What feels important here for you? Star two. My computer's being a little slow right now. I can't see who's raising their hand. Hold on one second. Oh, here we go. Anne.
Hi.
Hi.
I think what I'm seeing, impatience is one of the things that will drive me to consult rather than coach. But the other piece of it, like impatience, I feel like, yeah, that I can get a handle on. But I notice that when I'm working with clients, I get a flood of information kind of downloading into my brain about what they're saying, about the information that's made behind what they're saying. And that creates like a pressure or an urgency not to lose any of it, to make sure that it all kind of gets addressed, and I think I tend to nudge the conversation more into consulting at times when I feel like I don't want to lose that thing, and if I don't address it like right then, if it waits for another session or even for later in the same session, but if it seems like it's going to have to wait for another session, like what if I lose the thread of what I know about what they're needing to know about. So I have a little bit of a cold, so I'm a little foggier than usual.
No, you're making perfect sense, and I'm really glad you're bringing this forward, because I think, especially for people that are in sacred depths, like, we are, a lot of us, very intuitive, and a lot of that information does come flooding in. So I'm positive there are some other people right now listening and shaking their heads and totally getting what you're saying. And so... the first piece is like, yay, right? Like, how lucky are your clients to have you, that you're getting these downloads, right? And these pieces of information. And so then from there, the next question is, which of the pieces of information are meant to be delivered as a consult, right? As facting? And then which of the pieces of those information are meant to be delivered and created awareness around via questioning?
Right.
So it's not that you don't have to get to the pieces, right? But it's about just being a little bit more discerning around how they're being delivered. So that's number one. And then the second piece, just around time and losing the thread, is that I almost never worry about time in any particular session, because the way that I understand my relationship and my coaching containers with my clients is that it's bigger than just the session, that I'm holding them throughout the month and the months. So if we ever don't get to something that is vital, number one, every now and again I may go over a few minutes if I feel like they need to hear it in that exact moment from my voice live. But most of the time, if there is more, I'll follow up with an email, either writing or Voxer via voice. But I really like to use the container. And sometimes actually the time lapse can be super effective, like not hearing everything at once or being asked all the questions at once, but sometimes over time, right? Or giving journaling questions at the end of the call for things that you don't get to. What are you hearing in all of that that feels important for you?
So just the light bulb, as you were saying that just now, was also going back to like this past summer when I was doing the curriculum lab, and recognizing that what I wanted to do was much larger than and much more detailed than reasonably was going to be integrated by a client in the course. Mm-hmm. And that it sort of reminded me of that insight that it's actually a disservice to my client to flood them with more information than they can integrate. And so even though it might all be important, if they can't soak it in, it isn't going to do them any good.
Yeah.
And so connecting that with the piece about discerning what needs to be delivered as consulting or as facting versus what needs to have awareness created via questioning. Also, there's a piece of that plays in of letting it kind of, like letting the cream rise to the top, like giving it a minute for the layers to settle out and see what is the thing that they most need to soak in today.
Yeah.
Versus what might need to kind of marinate for a while.
Yeah, yeah. Or what's like a sub-insight that they don't actually need in this moment. They will need, but maybe not in this moment.
Yeah. And it also gives me some different thoughts about how visually to organize my own note-taking. Because, I have illegible handwriting as it is, but when I give myself different symbols or boxes where I can throw stuff I'm more likely to at least be able to decipher the hieroglyphics than when I'm trying to figure out, was that an insight that I had for them? Was that a note that I had for myself?
Yeah.
Was that just
Good.
Data that I wanted to capture? So
yeah.
There's a lot
Good.
Of layers in that.
Awesome. Good. Yeah, I can feel the wheels moving. So great. I'm so glad you brought it up. Good.
Yeah, thanks, Joanna.
You're welcome. All right, I'll take one more share before we move on. Christine.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. All right, so I had this experience this morning with a client who, she originally came to me for consulting, intuitive consulting, and her question was around, she's in a relationship with a married man, and she wanted clarity on whether to stay in the relationship or let it go. And same thing, just like what Anne was talking about, you know, I'm intuitive, I get all kinds of information, and I know exactly where the relationship is going. But I refrained from consulting and started asking her questions about what the relationship is providing for her at the moment, what is she looking for. And through asking questions, what came out was that she needed to stay in the relationship because it's providing a container of growth and self-reflection for her. And if I had gone ahead and done my usual, okay, well, you know, like your higher self and your people are, you know, like this is where this is going and
right.
let's look at why you're, right? We would have missed out on her having that opportunity and me having the opportunity to experience her owning why she needed to stay in that without making it right or wrong, like without any attachment to the outcome. Does that make sense?
Yes, 110%. It goes back to what I was sharing earlier, is that sometimes when people aren't told something, but they answer it for themselves, it's deeper and truer for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyone that's around children, it's like you can see it so clearly. This isn't the best example, but I'll still give it. Like, if I tell my kids to put their jackets on because it's cold, they won't listen to me, or they'll do it and they'll roll their eyes and they don't get it. But if they go outside and they feel really cold, then decide to put the jacket on themselves, not only is it much more empowered, but then they remember next time that they want to wear their jacket outside. The learning goes that much deeper, right?
Yeah. Because I know the relationship's not going to last, and I would have initially wanted to go in and rescue her.
Yeah, but that's not what she needs in this moment.
No.
That's not part of the learning journey for her right now, how she'll receive the most. Good.
Yeah.
Beautiful. All right, good. Such great shares and questions. Let's continue on. So now that we've kind of just established this, let's look at the elements of really powerful breakthrough questions. So what makes the best kinds of questions, the most powerful and potent kinds of questions? Well, here's the first thing, and this is really important. There's no formula for amazing questions. I wish there was, but there isn't. There's no formula, and that's because masterful questioning is truly an art. There's so many different client situations, scenarios, client moods, client energies, backgrounds, etc. And all of this, and this is why we learn deep listening, right? All of this needs to be taken into consideration when you go to ask a question. And that's back to coaching the what based on the who. So I can't give you an A plus B plus C, because that's really not, that doesn't work. That's just like surface level coaching. But what I can and what I will give you today are the elements that make up really powerful questions. And then next week we'll look at lots of different types of questions. So first, and I already kind of mentioned this, no coaching skill or transformational skill or healing skill exists in a vacuum. The most masterful practitioners are working all their skills at the same time. So in other words, for example, you can't ask really great questions if you haven't also been doing really deep listening and you haven't activated your curiosity and you haven't checked your filters, etc. You also can't ask masterful questions if you haven't paid attention to the energetics of the coaching relationship and leveled the playing field. The best questions are when everything really builds on each other and works together. Next piece that's really important, and this is one of those obvious things that's still really important, is when it comes to questioning and really good questioning, is don't ever expect any kind of particular answer or outcome. Don't be attached to the outcome. It will kill curiosity and the level playing field. As soon as you become attached, like ask, as soon as you ask a leading question where you expect a certain kind of answer or are attached to your client to say a certain kind of answer, it's like the conversation just stops there. Energetically, you're not going to know where to go next. It can really stop you in your tracks if you get an answer that you weren't expecting, if you were attached. And by the way, just as an aside, this goes for enrollment conversations as well. Whenever I ask questions on sales calls, I'm never expecting anything. Just to say, all of these questioning skills can be applied to your sales conversations as well. So just take a moment and be honest with yourself. How often do you expect a particular answer to a question when you're asking one? Or to a particular coaching outcome? Are you attached? In other words, are you attached when you're asking questions? So instead of expecting any kind of answer or outcome, instead of being attached to an answer to a question, instead follow your intuition and natural curiosity. So what that means is that the best questions come from deep listening to your client. And then as you listen to your client, you'll start to get curious about certain things. Your intuition is going to bring up some things, not definitive answers, right? But actually your curiosity, your intuition will get piqued around certain things. Or maybe you'll start to, even if you download answers, right, like both Anne and Christine were talking about, try not to see them as truths. Try to see them as questions, right? And you don't have to think too hard about this. It's the natural dance that occurs when you're listening deeply. So you can think of it this way. A good question is going to be rooted in the following four things. Number one, listening to your client and being attuned to their needs. Number two, keeping track of the bigger picture agenda. So what this means is when you ask questions, you're going to follow your intuition, or even when you create awareness by consulting or any of the other ways we looked at, you're always going to follow the natural intuition, the natural curiosity. That's another one of the four things that a good question is rooted in. So let me backtrack here. So first is listening to your client and being attuned to their needs. Second is listening to your own intuition and curiosity. But at the same time, it's not going to be an open-ended curiosity. There's always going to be, you're always going to be holding a bigger picture in your mind as you sort through which of the intuitions make sense to bring up through question, consulting, whatever it is, and which of the intuitions don't. And that bigger picture is going to be based both on what the client has said their intention is for that particular session, as well as what the client has said their intentions are for the span of your work together. And then the fourth thing that a good question is going to be rooted in is your own experience, what you know from your own experience, right? So that is where the consulting piece comes in. Another really important foundational element for powerful questions is to remember that your client always has a choice. Remember that your client always has a choice. So I know that this is obvious, right? You know, you hear me say it, and like, of course, we know human beings are at a point of choice in all moments, right? There isn't just one way. There are multiple opportunities for, you know, choices for them to go down. But sometimes we can forget about this principle of choice. Sometimes we can forget that we have choice in every moment, that our clients have choice. And we can almost get carried away with our clients' limited thinking on this, because a lot of times our clients are not in the frame of mind that they have a choice about anything. So let me make this more tangible. Let me give you some give you an example on this. So here's an example. My children, I have two kids, 5 and 11, they are complete, like they are so messy. It is unbelievable. They're like hurricanes. And I am the exact opposite. I love for things to be neat. When I have forgotten that I always have a choice, I fall into the thinking that it doesn't matter what I do, my house is not going to be clean. Or it doesn't matter what, the kids aren't going to clean up. When I fall into that thinking, I've forgotten that I have a choice, right? I actually have many choices. I can clean up the house on my own, right? It's not that the house isn't, I can clean up the house on my own. I can institute a system with the kids with consequences if I wanted to. I can, you know, like there are many multiple choices here, right? But if I come from a place of not having a choice, then what can oftentimes happen, like if your client comes from a place of not having a choice, right? It's just going to be like this. We can fall into that thinking with them. And so a really important thing here is to always ask yourself, the practitioner, what does she actually have a choice about, right? And then from there, ask questions to open up choices for the client. So back to the, like, let's say I was the client here with the kids that are the messes. What can this client do differently, right? What questions can you ask from a philosophy of choice? So in order to do this, number one, don't go into consulting mode, at least not right away. Maybe you've got a great parenting trick. You know, maybe you're a parenting coach, or just because you are a parent and from your expertise, you've got a great parenting trick to get the kids to clean up. But don't go straight in that moment into consulting mode. If the client is saying, oh, my kids are complete messes, it doesn't matter what I do, they won't clean up. That's number one. Number two, don't be attached to outcome, and don't be attached to getting the client a solution. There might not be a way for her kids to clean up, or maybe there is a way, but that way may not reflect her values or her energy, right? So the moment you become attached to the outcome, then you're not going to ask a question that's effective enough. Do both of those things. Remember that she has a choice. And then from there, ask questions, right? So, for example, when you do that, maybe a question that comes up is you may say to her, okay, I really hear that your children are messes. So then what would you like to receive around this issue? What is it that you really want here? This is similar to the intention setting, right, that we've spoken about at the beginning of the session, asking someone what they want to receive. When a client presents a situation to you where she's already presenting like she doesn't have a choice, don't rush to problem solve. Give her choices, and part of that choice is to ask her, what does she want to receive? Because she might just want to be seen in her frustration. Or maybe she just wants to be validated. Maybe she just wants to be told this is total normal kid behavior. Or maybe she does want a solution. Or maybe she wants a way to handle it herself so that she doesn't resent her kids. So don't make assumptions, right? And then give, open up that choice. Even asking just that simple question of, so what do you want to receive around this issue? Just that alone can be a breakthrough or a revelation, because it'll open up choices for her on how she wants to move forward. It'll open up opportunities. Or another example of a question that you could ask in a situation where a client has forgotten that they have choice is, what's the growth opportunity for you here? Where's the opportunity for you to grow here, right? That's going to open them up to see that they're not victims, that they have choices in the situation. Or you can simply just ask, where do you have choice in this situation, right? My kids are such messes. I don't think they're ever going to clean up. Okay, I hear that. And you can also first validate, that sounds really frustrating. So where do you have choice in this situation? Another way to open up a client to choices is to ask something like this. Is it true 100% of the time that no matter what you do, your kids won't clean up? Is that true all the time, 100% of the time? It's very rare that someone's going to answer yes, that is true 100% of the time. And even if it's just like a 5%, it's going to start opening them up to seeing things a little bit differently, to adjusting their attitude, and to finding solutions if that's what they want. We can only have a philosophy of choice with our clients if we also practice it for ourselves. It's really hard to not get caught up when a client has forgotten they have choice if we're not actively practicing this philosophy of choice in our own lives. So let me just ask you, so you can assess for yourself, on a scale of 1 to 10, How good are you at remembering that you have choice in your life, in your business? Do you tend to approach yourself, your life, without even realizing it, but without a philosophy of choice? Like, I just need to work this much, and this is that, right? One of my examples is where I really forget that I have choice a lot of the time is my mother is, you guys know, is very ill. I live in North Carolina. She lives in New Jersey, and I visit a lot, and I love to visit, but sometimes it's too much. It puts a strain on my life. But I find myself caught in the lack of choice thinking a lot, thus, like, I need to visit this amount, right? So on a scale of 1 to 10, how good are you at remembering that you have choice? 10 is, like, in all moments, all the time, you're at a philosophy of choice, and 1 is you barely ever remember that you have choice. You're just a victim of your circumstances all the time. No judgment here, right? Just so you can see for yourself. Next question. How does it impact your life when you're not in a philosophy of choice? How does that impact your life? What happens to your mood, to your outlook, to your decision-making process? Your ability to move forward in the ways that you want. What's one specific place in your life right now that could really benefit from you approaching with more of a choice, a philosophy choice, a philosophy of choice? So what's one specific place in your life right now that could really benefit from you having more of a philosophy of choice in the matter? And then here's a piece of homework for you. It's not on your worksheets, but I'll also post it in the Facebook group if you want to do a little extra credit. That can really help nail some of this. Think about each of the clients that you're working with or think about your coaching partner or even a couple people in your personal life. And name, write out the places where they are assuming that they don't have a choice. Name the places where they're just assuming that they don't have a choice. Okay. Let me pause here for a moment, just briefly to see if there are any questions or anything that you're seeing from this really important piece around choice, star two. Let's see. Christine.
So if there is something like I have chronic health issues, so there is... There are not choices that I have in terms of how my body may respond to something.
Yes, but where is there choice?
But there's choice around how I address it and how I look at it. I worked with, and so that would be the same with a client,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly, 100%, exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Good. I'm glad you're bringing that forward. You're welcome. Lucia.
Hi. I wonder what it is, or what would you advise if the choice becomes the struggle itself? If there are many choices you can choose from, but that's actually bringing up the struggle.
Say it. say it again a little louder. I'm hearing background noise, and it's just hard for me to hear what you're
yeah.
saying.
Yeah. All right. Can you hear me now better?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. My question is, what would you advise when the choice itself becomes the struggle, when there are so many choices that you get stuck in between the choices?
Okay. That's a little bit different than what we're talking about, but it's a great question. So, like, people that have so many choices that they don't know what to do, and then that starts to stress them out, and that's where the struggle is. Is that what you're asking?
Totally. Finding myself in the situation right now. That's why
yeah.
I'm asking out of personal
yeah.
interest.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that kind of situation, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all. You know, it would really depend on context and their patterning and, you know, all the different things. But one possible way through that is to first name it, right? So, like, all of the different choices are causing a struggle here, right? And so for one kind of person, it might just be because it's part of their pattern. It's part of their MO. When they have more than one choice, they get stressed out and they go into struggle. So you might want to do belief work around that. See where that started in the first place. And we'll get to that in rewiring negative thought patterns. But you what are the beliefs that are creating this struggle? For another client, it might be around, first of all, helping them build the belief that all is going to be well, no matter what choice they make, that they're not going to, you know, be out of choice after they make whatever choice they make, that all is well. It might be about really helping them get clear on their priorities so that they can tap more into their inner wisdom. It might be about helping them cultivate their ability to take a risk. So it would really kind of depend on the situation and the context, but you wouldn't, you would want to address it. You know, probably beliefs are going to come in there a little bit, but then, you know, you'll probably want to do one of the other pieces as well. I know I'm not giving you a definitive answer because it's so much of the what here is based on the who, but is that opening up some ideas for you?
Yes, thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay. All right. So let's keep on going. The next principle is for breakthrough questions is be willing to be lovingly bold. Be willing to be lovingly bold. And this is, by the way, a principle not just for questioning, but for just anything that you're, as a sacred depth practitioner, just like all over, creating awareness, all the things. Be willing to be lovingly bold. So what does this mean? It means that oftentimes our questions are not as powerful as they could be, because we get scared to be bold. We get scared that the client is going to get upset or offended or anything like that. So I'll give you an example. Let's say you've got a client who shares with you that they're working all the time, that they're upset, that they don't ever have enough time for themselves and their family. You know, they're just so upset. They're working all the time. So a good enough question, one that's not necessarily lovingly bold, and this would be more of like how a standard coach would operate, if that client's sharing they're working all the time, they never have enough time for themselves, you know, a good enough question would be, so what can you do differently, right? Or what would help you make more time for yourself or your family? But a breakthrough question here, one that's lovingly bold, might be, why do you sense that you're addicted to work? Or when did you start making work your top priority? So being bold and loving absolutely requires inner work. Because in order to be lovingly bold, you need to totally respect your client, totally respect yourself, and not be afraid of getting your client angry or a little triggered. So we've already looked a little bit at some of the inner work behind this in a previous call. You know, we looked at how scared or concerned are you that clients are going to get angry or upset with you, right? So just a moment to, you know, come back to that and keep on working on that piece. All right, I want to talk next, and I want us to look next at language. There's a lot of pieces around language that can help you create very masterful questions. So, first of all, what I have found is that most of the time, not always, but most of the time, the questions that are succinct, the questions that are clear and direct and without too many words, are the ones that are the most powerful. Every now and again, we need to formulate a longer question, right? But one of my kind of just personal practices is I will pause for a moment before I ask a question to think about the shortest way, the most succinct way that I can ask it, because usually it's going to zing more when I do. Along with that, 9 times out of 10, don't stack questions. In other words, really try to ask one question at a time. Every now and again, there's a situation where you may ask two questions at once. I do that sometimes, and sometimes I do it just because it's not the best way to do it, but that's just how it's coming out, right? But then other times I do it because it really does need both questions. But I find that a lot of coaches sometimes ask a couple questions at once. It's not effective. Try to ask as much as you can, one question at a time. Use your client's terminology. So when a client uses certain language, if you're really activating your deep listening skills, you're going to pick up on language that the client uses that is really important for them and really meaningful for them. So, for example, if they refer to their partner as their partner, don't refer to their partner as their wife. If they are using a certain kind of term a lot, like transformation, for example, or whatever it is, excavation, whatever it is, if you notice that they're using a term more than once, or they've used a term and you sense that there's energy behind it, when you ask the question, use the term in the question. when clients hear their language mirrored back to them, they feel heard and they feel that you're curious and interested in them and their world. Another way of using clients' terminology and mirroring their language is to use, the best way I can describe it is to use language that helps them learn through their already established filters. So what I mean by that is, let's say your client is a yoga teacher. Use yoga metaphors when you ask questions, right, if it applies. Don't do it just to do it. But, you might be asking a question. You might be talking about a personal relationship, but it might really have deep resonance for that client to say, what would happen if you did an inversion, if you looked at this, at your relationship through an inversion, right? Or, whatever it is. Or maybe they work in the birth world, or they have a child and they were really into the whole birth process, right? You might be talking about their career, but use birth metaphors, use labor metaphors in your questions. If they love a certain kind of movie and you have a certain movie and you happen to know that movie really well, it could be like, what would such and such actor do in this situation, or whatever it is. Use mirror their language by using their filters. Books that they've read, anything that has meaning in their world. If you're working with a client on a family situation, but they're really corporate, right? They've got a corporate job, they're really into corporate, you might use a team metaphor with them. So you want to, and you can only do this by deep listening, you want to use your client's terminology. But that being said, there are moments where you're going to want to use new terminology as well to create awareness when you ask questions. You're going to want to bring a new concept in when you ask questions. So one practice that I find very helpful is when it comes to this is to actually be conscious of always expanding my own vocabulary and just concepts that I'm understanding in the world. The more new words, the more new concepts I learn, the more that I can bring them into my client conversations, right? So that's just, that's just my thing. I just love anytime I learn something new, if it applies. But beyond that, the other way to bring new terminology into your questions, and this is a really good practice, is to ask yourself, what concept would be helpful next for this client? What concept would be helpful next for this client? So, for example, recently I was coaching a client and she was talking, she recently had a baby, and the process of having a baby and all the things, it's her first baby, has really activated for her a lot of her anxiety, a lot of repetitive thinking, all the things. And as she was sharing all of this with me, at some point in the conversation, I asked her, I said, where do you think the roots of your catastrophic thinking is? The catastrophic thinking was the new terminology there. I said to myself, what concept is going to be helpful next for this client? I wanted to create awareness. You know, my answer to that question was I want to create awareness around her catastrophic thinking. As soon as I asked the question, it's a concept she had heard before for sure, but it just hadn't been in the scope of our coaching at all. And as soon as I asked that question, it was a massive light bulb moment for her just by bringing the new terminology in. Another example is if someone, let's say, is super stuck on something and they're talking about how stuck they are, you know, this and that, you might ask, you know, what was the calcification process around this? Right, so you're not bringing something in from left field that has nothing to do with the conversation. You're riffing on what the client has been talking about, but just by bringing that new terminology in, you're opening things up for them. Earlier on a coaching call today, I had a client who was sharing that she has this fear. What was it? Exactly that she was saying, oh, we were talking about her taking more time off. She has a very successful business. She already takes a good amount of time off, but she wants more time off. And she was talking about, like, this feeling of, like, if she took another 2 weeks off, that she'd be letting her clients down, you know, this and that. And the question I asked her, we hadn't been talking about these terms at all, but the question that I asked was, you know, what's the difference between service and servitude? And it was like, boom, it was a breakthrough moment for her. It was a light bulb moment for her, right? Just by asking that question, even before she answered, she started cracking up, right? And she could already see it. But then as she began to articulate the difference between those two terms for herself, she could see so clearly that she was in a philosophy of servitude, and that's what was holding her back from taking that extra time off. All right. Next principle to think about, so as a general rule, ask open-ended questions, not multiple choice, not yes or no, but open-ended questions. There are a few moments where a yes or no question or a multiple choice question is the question that needs to be asked and is going to be the most powerful. And I'll tell you what that moment is in a moment. But first, just to say in general, really watch, a lot of practitioners default into yes or no or multiple choice, you know, kind of questions. And most of the time, that's not going to activate the deepest learning, the deepest breakthrough. Now, here is when it will. Here is the moment where you want to ask a yes or no question. When your client is at a moment, a really, really ripe moment of making a decision, internal or external. If you sense that your client is just so ripe to make a big decision, internal or external, for themselves, that's when you want to ask a yes or no question. So, for example, if you've been working a couple of sessions with a client, they really want to date, but they're scared of online dating and they're not sure, and you've been working through this fear, it might be one session, it might be a couple of sessions, and you sense your client is ripe, they're ready to commit, ask the yes or no question. Ask, are you ready and willing to commit to putting a profile up or whatever it is, right? That's the it will be very powerful because the yes that they say or the no that they say, right? Don't ever be attached to an outcome. They may say a no, but either way, it's going to be a powerful affirmation for that client. Make sure, and this kind of goes along with the open-ended and not being attached, make sure that the questions that you ask aren't leading questions. So here's an example. Let's say you've got a client that says, I wish I wouldn't always miss my deadlines at work. A leading question, this is also a yes or no question, is, do you think it's because you procrastinate? A non-leading question might be, why do you think that you're missing deadlines? So don't lead. Also, don't make assumptions, right? This is back also a little bit to being attached to outcome, but a little bit different. Don't make assumptions and don't bake assumptions into your questions. So here's an example. Maybe your client says, this was a really bad week with my husband. I said all of the wrong things again. A coach that's making an assumption or a practitioner that's making an assumption might say, well, that seems to happen a lot with you. What's going on around that? A practitioner that's not making an assumption might say, well, tell me more about what happened. So the assumption here is that the client said all the wrong things again, right? Maybe the client didn't say all the wrong things. Maybe there's some other pieces to look at here. But if you just rush to, well, it's the why or what's going on around that or whatever it is, there's an assumption baked in there. Here's another example. Let's say a client says, you know, I want to take my business much bigger, really want to take my business bigger. The assumption, if you were coming from, you know, a question from making an assumption, you might say, awesome, I'm so excited and you really are so ready for more clients and higher rates. And you maybe ask a question, strategizing question from there. The non-assumption might sound like this, that sounds really exciting. What does bigger mean to you, right? They said, I want to make my business much bigger. Don't assume that that means more clients or more money, right? Ask them, what does bigger mean to you? Remember, this is another principle. Remember, and this is, goes for everything, not just questioning. Remember that as a practitioner, you can take the time to pause. You don't always have to rush to ask a question or to create awareness or whatever it is. Like I said earlier, sometimes I take a moment because I'm formulating something in my mind, right? I might just say, hold on a moment, you know. Other times, I'm going to pause because the question that I'm about to ask is really important, and I want to give some space around it. I want to break pattern from the cadence of the conversation so that attention is really not just like listening, but like heart, mind, soul attention is paid to that particular question. Think about your tone, the pitch or the quality of your voice when you ask questions. Think about your pacing, how fast or slow that you speak. Think about your volume, how loud or soft. Think about your rhythm, the flow, the melody of the words, right? All different situations require different tones, pacing, volume, rhythm. You'll know intuitively. I don't have like a list of this situation requires this, that, and the other thing. You're going to know intuitively. I promise you, if you follow your intuition, right? But take some time to reflect on these things. Slow down the line of questioning. This is something that I teach for those of you that have been in curriculum lab. This is connecting the dots. So a very big mistake that practitioners make, especially very smart practitioners who are very intuitive, who get things and download things very quickly, which is all good things, but there's a liability to that. And the liability is that your brain is like connecting the dots quick, quick, quick. Like you're seeing things with the practitioner so quickly, but you actually need to slow it down for your client. Your brain already sees it or gets it or has made the connection, but that's not necessarily so for your client. So you want to really connect the dots. Slow the questions down. Go step by step. If you see that your client is already caught up to where you are, great. But if not, you want to slow it down. Sometimes connecting the dots can also come in the form of giving an example, either just if you're creating awareness or within a question, right? So what that would look like is, you know, sometimes I might say, let me see what's a good example here. I might be introducing a new concept, like the next concept that the client needs is metamorphosis. This client is ready for a metamorphosis or a reinvention, right? I may ask a question like, what does reinvention mean for you right now? But I might, just in case there is a little slowing down that needs to happen there, I might just back it up with an example, right? Like, so for example, blah, 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 right? And just give an example of metamorphosis or reinvention. Another thing that will help you slow down the line of questioning is to be able to discern the right moments for exploring inner feelings, motivations, limits, obstacles, versus the moments to ask questions about action and moving forward. This is really, really, really important. Sometimes the practitioner, because they've already connected all the dots, because they are like seeing the whole thing, they're ready to move on to the action questions, like, so what do you want to do about this? Or, so what is the vision going to be? Or, let's look at the strategy, or, you know, all of those things. But just make sure that your client is caught up. They might still need the inner questions, the feeling questions, the motivation questions. And we'll look at all those different types of questions next week. As an aside, this concept of connecting the dots, slowing down the line of questioning, this applies 110% to marketing as well. A big mistake that super smarty pants people, I like to say, don't be too smarty pants in your marketing. A big mistake that smarty pants people make in their marketing is they forget to connect dots. Like they're going way too quickly. You need to slow your marketing down. Explain things step by step. Just because you get it doesn't mean that your readers or your listeners or your prospects get it. Think about your word choices when you ask questions. So here are some examples. Just think about the differences between these questions, because sometimes particular words, hopefully as you're starting to see through this whole conversation, particular words can sometimes make all of the difference, right? So just think about these two questions. What would feel empowering for you versus what would feel pleasurable for you, right? Depending on the context, on the question, depending on the context, what's happening in the conversation, what the client wants, there's going to be a right moment for the first question, there's going to be a right moment, or the moment's going to be for the second question. Or think about the difference between these next two questions. How do you know who your friends are? Maybe a client is talking about friendships and who they, you know, this and that, right? So think about word choices. How do you know who your friends are versus how do you know who your trusted friends are, right? Just that one word, that one added slipped in word there, trusted, can make all of the difference. Here's another example of word choices. Such similar questions, but they do different things. What can you do to move forward, right? That's a question you might ask. What can you do to move forward here? Think about the difference between that question and this question. What will you do to move forward here? If you've got a client that is like almost ready for action, but there's still some hesitation, you're probably going to want to ask, what can you do to move forward, right? And then discuss and get them, right? If you're with a client that is ready and ripe and totally there, ready to take action, you're going to ask, what will you do to move forward? So this, again, goes back to coaching the what based on the who. Let's say a client is sharing about a tense situation that they're in with someone else. Again, word choices and questions matter. For one client, you might ask, how would you like to resolve this tense situation, right? But for another client, you might ask, what would be an integrity here, right? Maybe you know that this client values integrity, or they've shared it somehow in the conversation. For another client, the best question is going to be, how can you set aligned boundaries for yourself here, right? It could be the same exact situation for each of those clients, but the word choice, you want to start to get precise. The best way that you can get precise, one of the best ways, I should say, that you can get precise on your word choices is to be conscious of your client's goals, your client's priorities, but maybe most importantly, to be conscious of their values and of their needs. That will really help you determine, get even more particular when you ask questions. Okay, a couple of other pieces I want to make sure I share before we wrap for today. A good coaching, in any good session, there's going to be some tension. And what I mean by that is that your clients shouldn't always have the answers to your questions right away. Your questions should sometimes stump them for a moment. Not every question should be a stumper, but sometimes your questions should stump them. Your questions should sometimes challenge your client, should sometimes stretch them, right, and challenge their own assumptions. And when that happens, sometimes there's going to be silence. There's going to be a moment of tension. There's going to be maybe even a moment of questioning you, you know, and your motives or whatever it is. That's okay. Silence can be a good thing. And even just a little bit of tension for a moment can be a good thing. Be conscious or be aware of what level of learning and transformation a client needs in that moment. Be aware of what level of learning and transformation a client needs in that moment. So what I mean by this is that, and some of you have heard me speak about this, I teach about this in Curriculum Lab. There are four, what I've come to see is that there are four levels of learning and transformation that any human being really needs to go through in order to learn something or in order to transform something. Those levels are, so the first level is the mind. They need to grasp the new learning with their minds, conceptually, mentally, cognitively. But that's not enough for someone to really learn something or to change, transform. Next, their heart needs to be activated. They need to feel an emotional attachment to it. They need to feel a heart connection to the concept, to what they want to transform, to the new way of being, to the, right, whatever it is. But even that's not enough. Next thing that's required is a spirit level, activating the level of spirit. And you don't need to be spiritual here. That's not what that necessarily means. What it means is the client needs to see that this new learning, this new concept, this new belief, or somewhere in the transformation, they need to connect it to something bigger than themselves. That could be God or goddess or spirit or whatever, but it could just be what's best, like a higher wisdom, or something like that. And then people also need their body level activated. They need to actually feel it in their body or make a body memory of a new feeling or feel how it, get how it feels in their body. So the reason why I'm sharing all of this with you right now is because this can really help inform your questions, right? Are you going to ask a cognitive type question, something around like a belief? What would a belief be here? What do you think about this? Or is something that's going to activate the mind? Or is the moment ripe for a heart question? How does this make you feel? Or how would you feel if? Or is the moment ripe for a spirit question? What's the higher wisdom here? What would your late grandmother say about this? What does your soul deeply desire here? Or maybe it's the moment is ripe for a body question. How does this feel in your body? What is your gut telling you about this? When you say these words, how does it feel in your throat and your neck, right? And we'll next week we'll go more into different questions for those different levels of learning. But I kind of drop it in here because I want you to be aware of it. All right, there are a couple of other pieces, but I think I'm going to save them because I've shared so much with you today. I want to take a moment before we wrap for the day for you to integrate. I've got some homework for you. I'll share it with you in a moment. But for right now, take a moment and write down, what are you really taking for yourself from our call today? What are you seeing that's important for you, that you're excited to think more about, what's been activated for you here? And also, what questions do you have for me? I know I shared a lot. So I'm going to open up for shares and questions in a moment. Let me give you your homework. So you'll have two PDFs in your member center. One is a way, let me open up so I can explain what they are a little more. So one is an assessment that you can use after your sessions that will help you just start to improve your sessions more and help you get more precise with your questions. It's pretty self-explanatory. I highly, highly, highly recommend I've spoken a little bit before about the assessment forms. I really recommend using them at least for a little while. You'll see your coaching is going to improve vastly. It's a way of reflecting after you've had a session and building muscles and building skills. So that's one thing that you're going to have for you in the member center. And then the second is just specific homework on questioning. You'll really like it. If you have clients, when you're working with clients, I want to invite you over the next week or two to slow down a little bit in your sessions and just take a moment to craft questions based on the principles we've spoken about today. Don't freak out. I shared a lot of information with you. It's not about remembering all of the principles. Like, you've gotten them. Don't worry about them now. Now, just you might review your notes or whatever it is, and we're going to continue to work all these things. So it's not about remembering all these principles in the moment. It's just trusting that they're integrating in you and taking a moment to just craft a question. See if you can slow down a little bit. And for those of you that are working with coaching partners, same thing. I want you to really, and it's okay, especially in the partner sessions, the practice sessions that you're doing, you just tell your partner, hold on, I want to take a moment here. I'm thinking about the question that I'm going to ask you, right? I say that in client sessions all the time, by the way. But I want you to really take time to think about the questions that you're asking. Don't default to consulting. Lean in to asking more questions for the practice this week. And then in the breakdown, when you and your partner discuss all aspects, but make sure you spend some time really talking about some of the questions that were asked and break them apart. See if you can make them better or see if they were just the exact perfect question to be asked. All right. So I would love, before we wrap, to hear any questions that you have. Any takeaways that you want to share? I'd love to hear a takeaway or two. Of course, post them in the Facebook group as well. Any questions? Star two. Hold on a second. My computer is being funny again. All right. Christine.
So I'm wondering if pacing in terms of where in the coaching session, pacing your questions in terms of where in the coaching session is something to be aware of. I'm thinking about how sometimes my sessions tend to go over, and I'm starting to realize through this conversation today that I think it's because when I get towards the end of the session, I'm asking the question, how is that feeling? It's like then we're ending up in a whole
You're opening up a whole. It's not like the end of a session thing. So I'm so glad that you're recognizing that. I'm also so glad you're bringing it forward because it's common for that to happen. So, you know, this actually I think relates to what Anne was asking earlier. I never number one, I just never worry about time. Every now and again, I do. It's not fair to say I never do. Every now and again, I do. But, you know, in general, like, I know we have a whole container. I know I can give them homework in between sessions. And if we are getting to, like, there's 4 minutes left, 5 minutes left, and we're, the next thing has been opened, what I'll do is, instead of going into feeling questions or going deeper into the thing that's been opened, I'll start to move towards wrapping up and giving homework around it. So I'll acknowledge, I'll say, phew, this is really juicy, and I feel like we're hitting on something really important here. So first things first, I want to give you some homework assignments, right? And I'll maybe ask some of the questions that I would have wanted to ask or whatever it is, but I'll give them journaling, I'll give them sometimes drawing, you know, whatever, and we'll talk more about different types of homework later on in the program. It might be ritual, whatever it is. So, and I'll let them know, please, I want you to send me the answers. You know, let's track this, and for sure we'll pick this up next time if that's what needs to be picked up. And then from there, I'll move into asking about takeaways, right? So what are you taking? Like, we're at an exciting point here. What are you seeing? What are you leaving this session with? And sometimes when I give the homework, after I give all the questions or the things that I'm thinking about, I may also ask, like, are there any questions that you want to add to that list for yourself to answer?
Okay.
So it's a way of using the time well, starting to wrap up, and using the full container. Is that helpful?
Yes, and because then it also requires me to be comfortable with the idea that we can end the session even if they're not feeling great.
Yes. So that's another piece here. So, like, what if the client isn't feeling great, right? So, again, like, first acknowledge, honor what is. You know, don't pretend like it's all la-di-da. But honor it. Say, like, I know that as we wrap this session, you're really feeling your fear of blah, or you're feeling confusion around X or Y, or Z, whatever it is, and then normalize it, right? Like, just say, like, it's okay. I'm so glad we opened this up. And we're going to continue to work on this. And even just the opening this up is going to work through you even before we have our next session. And in order to support you through it, here's the next piece that I want you to work on. And I also, please check in with me tomorrow or 2 days. Let me know how you're feeling as you do this work.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
So helpful.
Good. I'm so glad. You're welcome. All right, everyone. We are at time. Please post takeaways, questions, what's moving through you in the Facebook group. I love to hear from you. Let me know what you need. I'm thinking about all of you, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. Bye.
The moderator has left the conference.